Western, similar to this year, they really don't have a singular pass rush specialist on that Western defense. They've got guys who can get home, certainly, but there's not one guy like a Deontay Knight where you're like, holy crap, we need to make sure that we're watching out for this guy.
A Dylan Ainsworth.
Yeah, Dylan Ainsworth. Oh my God, that guy.
Hello and welcome to At the 55, your home for OUA football. Me and Tom are back on the mics to set up the national semifinals, the UTEC and Mitchell Bowls. We have Western representing the OUA, going to be facing off with the Montreal Caravan. Tom, you and I both have experiences with this Montreal club, but in such different fashion. And you, beyond just Montreal, and I know that that's a personal one for you, but have so much experience with these national semifinals and Vanier Cup games. I feel like we've talked about this a bit before, just in the context of the OUA, right, of getting down the line. But this time's different than all others. So I need, just like for our folks out there who tune in, for you to share what this is like, what it is like to stare this beast of a conference in the face in the RCQ champ and take them on toe-to-toe. But before we get to all that, Tom, how the heck are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well, man. I'm getting butterflies after a kind of question like that, trying to go back to my glory days of playing for the McMaster Marauders. But yeah, it is, I guess, to hop right into this, it's one of those feelings that you have to take a second to like actually pull your head out and say, wow, like look at where we are. Because as you and I both know, the grind that it takes to just win Ontario, to win the Yates Cup on its own, is such a battle in itself. And the amazing teams that are in there, obviously, during our time, the Guelph Griffins, the McMaster Marauders, Western is always amazing, Queens, Laurier, like those are not easy teams to just roll over. And so you get to the mountaintop of the OUA and you say, oh, this is amazing, we accomplished this. And something I think you experience as well, and you've kind of talked about, is that in that of itself, sometimes teams can just say, oh, we made it to the mountaintop here, and then realize, oh crap, we've got another two games to play.
Yeah,
one of them being a Vanier Cup. And you almost lose sight of that because of the accomplishment of the Yates Cup. And you and I both know, I freaking love that Yates Cup trophy. The solid oak, the beauty that it has. I love that thing. But to get to that mountaintop, to win, and to continue to kind of put your head down and try to grind and try to work at things. And then it hit me during practice, where I'd be practicing, warming up, and, you know, just kind of talking and joking around, and then feeling like I'm looking around, but I'm looking around at like the rest of the conference and saying, wow, we are the only team in Ontario that is practicing right now. We are the lone team at the top of the OUA going up against the other lone team in whatever conference at the time. And that feeling is just, it's so strange, because you're so used to like, hey, we got the Battle of Highway 6. We got Laurier coming up. We're going down to London to play against Western. And then suddenly your eyes are set across the rest of the country here. And it's just a different animal entirely.
And not only that, but you have, and that was a brilliant breakdown of your personal experience with that. But you have some attention on you now from some larger media outlets. And, you know, you asked about this question a while back, and I think the way I'd responded was kind of like, you know what, frankly, like when we knew how good we were and we had those 7-1 seasons and we're making it to Yates Cups, we expected to be in OUA semifinals games and be competing for a Yates Cup. But yeah, you're bang on as far as when you're the only team in the OUA. And of course, neither of us played at Western. So maybe for the boys over there in purple, it still doesn't feel, it's still not as surreal until maybe you're one of two left. And even then, they still have quite a good track record of being in those games. But you have all these things weighing into effect, and just getting a scouting report where all of a sudden you're like, that ain't an OUA team on there. That's, you know, it's not week 9 blah, blah, blah game. It's not quarterfinals. It's not Yates Cup prep. It says UTEC Bowl, Mitchell Bowl, whatever it might be. In case you don't know, of course, our matchups are in the UTEC Bowl, the Western Mustangs, our Western Mustangs as a product of us being your home for OUA football, visiting the Montreal Caravan. And the Mitchell Bowl, it is the St. FX X-Men visiting the UBC Thunderbirds in a matchup that is perhaps less sexy, but you were so spot on for bringing up that matchup when Saskatchewan, who, if you weren't a believer in their talent to that point in the season, and certainly some people had some takes coming out of that semifinal matchup when St. FX was putting up a good game, just watch the Vanier, where they were, you know, in that game against Laval start to finish. I want to throw something else at you quick, Tom, because we have a quarterback, of course, now in the OUA who is a Hec Creighton nominee who's no longer playing football for the season, of course, in Taylor Algersma. But we still have some stellar quarterbacks in the mix. And I guess I want to frame it like this. Maybe this works best going afterwards, but we have some names like, and I know you want to dive into some Vanier Cup history, but we have just names of Hillock, Rooker, Senecal, Fagnon. You know, we've talked about the quality of quarterbacks we've had in the OUA in this past year, some of the great young quarterbacks that we've had. When I think about that list, and obviously I'm not nearly as plugged in U Sports-wise as you are, and some of the other great people like Deshaun and Persevere covering it, in just the last couple weeks with the updates you've been giving and kind of doing a bit of my own research, seeing some of these names, this has to be, and this is kind of our call to action for our Ken Wallers of the world. This is such an elite class of quarterbacks in these national semifinals. And to say, like we said, you still have a guy like Arnaud Desjardins and Taylor Algersma not even in these games. Mm-hmm. When you just think about those names that list off being in this game, these two games, I should say, and then obviously some of the guys we know who aren't still playing, what does that make you feel about the state of our game right now at the university level across Canada?
I think this is the most optimistic that I have been in a long time about the quality of play on the field here. Because once again, you know, those are four unbelievable names. And like you said, there's no Desjardins. There's no Algersma included in there. Eli Hettlinger from UAB. And even Tichinski out in Manitoba there. Like, there are some fantastic quarterback play across the country here. And something that you and I opened up with just in the OUA, we thought that there were going to be such a resurgence of that. Now, obviously, as the season went on, certain people came to the top, other teams struggled, whatever else. But the overall sense of this is that I believe this position in particular is getting better and better. And the idea that if the quarterback is getting better, chances are that means the coaching is getting better, kids are getting more developed, and that's a great sign for Canadian football in general. And, you know, it kind of harkens me into a question and something that I think we could even say for an entire podcast here, but I would be interested to hear your thoughts on, with the Canadian game as it is here, we've got so many, and I think it starts first and foremost at the high school level, at comparing us to the states, at how many high schools we have in a certain area compared to what the states would have. You know, in just my hometown of Burlington, I think I counted up, there's something like 9 or 10 high schools in that one city, whereas in the states you might have 1 or 2. And then suddenly not only are you getting such an amalgamation of kids, but you're getting some of the best coaches there, and you're getting all of the, you know, a supercharged team in that sense. With the spread out of teams that are in that, well, the spread out schools that happen, you're obviously spreading your resources. More kids get a chance to play, certainly, but how many quality coaches are there at that high school level teaching kids, getting kids ready? And so how many kids feel that the way that they should get proper coaching, or at least they trust in the coaches that they have, then they go and play summer ball, and they go and play Stampeders, or they play SX Ravens, or whatever the case may be, and they get some quality coaching there. but that eats into their workout time. Mm-hmm. And so while you get kids who, you know, the skill players certainly, I think, are getting better and better, and you can see that with just the amazing receiving corps that we've seen just in the OUA, how do you feel the Canadian way of focusing on almost football year round rather than how it is with the States, where high school football is everything. And then when you're not in that, you are weight training and you're really pumping iron that way. Like I said, I think this is a large question, but I just wanted to get your general thoughts on that.
I've sat in many bars having this conversation with some awesome football people, especially when I was in London and some of the guys I was coaching with. This has been a point of conversation I've had many times, that especially in Ontario, yeah, to your point, we play a lot of football. And obviously I'm not shy of making basketball comparisons, but you actually hear people compare with in the States with their AAU model of having kids play basketball so consistently, tournaments where they're playing 3-4 games in a day as part of a tournament, whereas the European model is way more skill development based and just saying, no, everyone's going to learn how to dribble, everyone's going to learn how to shoot, everyone's going to learn how to pass, everyone's going to learn how to do all these types of things, and the game will kind of take care of itself in a more, well, not condensed fashion. This is obviously, as you said, something that could be a much expanded on question, and someone who's a high school teacher and at a school here in Toronto that just recently is rejuvenating their football program. You know, it's exciting because you mentioned, how many programs was it you said are in the Burlington area?
About 9 or 10.
Like, there might be around that in Toronto right now. And if for some reason you're tuning into this podcast and you don't just know the just geographical size difference and numerical size and population between Burlington and Toronto, it's immense. And on the other hand, I think when I was in London, there's something like there's 20 plus schools or something in the like greater London area, if you will, that have high school football. You know, I don't know what the answer is. And I think Quebec takes that model a little bit more of the American style too, because they obviously do the Team Quebec stuff as part of the Canada Cup series, but then they don't have, I don't think they do summer ball out there the way that we have like OSFL and everything like that. And then it gets tricky because as someone who's coached OSFL and then with the Team Ontario stuff, there are programming issues and that come up when all of a sudden some of your best players are missing a weekend because they're trying to be at the Red Black Bowl. And understandably, and because there's great coaching there, this is such a rabbit hole of a conversation point, but that, you know, maybe we should table it a little bit more. Though it does make me think of something that we talked about, that like there's obviously great clinics that people go to for like for skill development for players, but it would be great for more clinics specifically catered towards just like, hey, you're a high school football coach. And maybe you do it because you played a little football yourself, or you just have that sports acumen to be able to have some of those local university programs and people with a slightly higher understanding of the game to have clinics where you bring in more coaches. Because, you know, I know a lot of people who go to these clinics in the States, and that's great because those are available. If we have those a little more localized, more geared towards our game, it's kind of the idea that like you, and I literally mean you, Tom Sterling, as someone who understands, you know, the offensive line position so well as you do both as a player and as a coach and a number of other things, that for you to share that with, say, 10 other high school coaches who might be, you know, still figuring it out, that then translates to, at minimum, per coach, like 7 offensive linemen that they're coaching. So by you sharing that wealth with people, all of a sudden that can multiply into affecting 70 athletes that much quicker and things like that. And like I said, I'm sure there are, but I almost think that, and Football Canada does do all sorts of clinics. I understand that. It's not a comment on that. But I almost feel like maybe that's part of the process too. It was just sharing that wealth with coaches and things of that nature. Aaron Giesler, I know you're listening. Let's schedule a conversation to have about this, because, hey, we've talked about it so many times, and often our attempts at growing the game comes sometimes in the form of what people might call complaining or belly aching, and I'm certain it does, and yeah, I'll admit it does, and I'm the first to be doing that complaining or belly aching, but we're all just out here trying to grow the game as best we are, whether it's in our realm here of promoting it and trying to shine some light on it, or in the ways that we coach and everyone else is trying to help build it out. That was a hell of a question, Tom Sterling.
Yes,
but
I know I hit you with something like that, but I just, it's something that you and I have spoken about in just a little bit here and there. And it was something that I'm interested in getting your opinion on. But like I said, we could easily make that its own podcast here.
No doubt. Yeah.
Now, unless you have another thing to say on that, I have another question.
Oh, hit me. Hit me.
So something I was mulling around, and I don't know anything for sure. I just wanted to hear your general thoughts. When we think about our Heck Crichton nominees and the Heck Crichton winners that are here, typically most of those players play on good enough teams that they are in playoff games. They are more often than not fighting for their own conference championships and potentially going into the Vanier Cup and that things. Do you think that if you make it out of your conference as a Heck Crichton nominee, the play that you have in the playoffs can negatively affect or positively affect your standing in the Heck Crichton race? The reason why I say that, even when the four people who were nominated this year, you have Matthew Peterson, running back for Alberta out west. He's no longer playing. Taylor Elgersma for Laurier. He's no longer playing. Jonathan Seneca, who is playing, and Silas Fagnon, who is playing. Do you think that even just looking at that, that Silas and Jonathan have a better understanding or a better chance at winning something than Taylor or Matthew Peterson, despite the fact that I'm sure both of them played well versus that? And even you can look back to 2021, Trey Ford wins the Heck Crichton, but he doesn't play in as many games, so you're just viewing his regular season, and he's unbelievable, and he absolutely deserves to win. But if, say, something were to happen where he goes out and he plays in the playoff game, even a semifinal or Yates Cup, and he, for whatever reason, is not Trey Ford and is not the unbelievable player that he is and plays very poorly, do you think that that has an effect?
Do I think it has an effect, or should it have an effect?
Either way you want to answer that.
The Trey Ford comp is interesting because, like, even that year they were, what, I guess 3-3 because it was the COVID shortened year. 500 on his whole career, yet you can't levy any of that at his feet because the numbers are stupid. And he played in the OUA where we consistently get, what, 4 or 5 teams in the U Sports top 10 ranking? Though I know a lot of folks out of Ontario will say there's an Ontario bias towards that. And hey, I don't know who the voters are. For some reason, they don't include me and Tom. Actually, U Sports-wise, maybe that wouldn't be right. You should be on that panel, Tom. But certainly not me for U Sports. It's tough because there's so many considerations you could take into the fold. Because once again, with that Ontario piece, think about how many top 10 teams Taylor Elgersma was having to battle. Like, we did the comparison with him and Senecal, and it swings Taylor's way. And then, as I said as well, like, you could pull up the rankings right now. I mean, at the end of the season, you have, as far as teams from in the top 10, you have Montreal in third, Laval in fifth. And that's it as far as RCQ teams. The next one you have is Concordia at 12, whereas you have Laurier sitting in second. Of course, Taylor's playing. First is Western. And then you get Queens and Windsor rounding out the top 10. So not a massive gap in there as well. So the level of competition you're playing,
the thing that really sparked the idea for me is that I think you and I have both said and agreed, and I think you've said on other podcasts as well, that 2019 year was Trey Ford's best year, where he was unbelievable, and they gave the award to Chris Merchant for the OUA. I am in no way saying that Chris Merchant doesn't deserve that, because he was an unbelievable quarterback. Don't get me wrong here, but does the fact that he's playing on the Western Mustangs, who are unbelievable and amazing, and everything that they do, does that impact how they view Trey Ford, Chris Merchant, because he's on a winning team?
I mean, it kind of goes back to our J.P. Simmons-Kinda, Keon Edwards debate, where it becomes a question of, maybe I'll ask, throw it back to you, because like when we're thinking Creighton, like is the notion the most valuable player of all of U sports, all CIS football, or is it more lean towards most outstanding? I actually don't know off the top of my head what the wording is in the criteria for that award, because like this is where it becomes super important, because once again, the juggernaut that is the Western Mustangs year after year is so reliant, is reliant on all the pieces that make them great. And then you look at, say, let's go back to Jonathan Senecal. They're the Montreal defense, and that's kind of one of the interesting things I'm going to throw at you when we look at this game, is that, you know, we get a little styles make fights a little bit in this one, where that Montreal defense is so stellar. And of course, the Western ones know nothing to sneeze at either. So like no one's ever in these positions because like it's football, right? Like these, you don't have people, like you just can't really carry a team without having the success of the other aspects of your team that are going to buoy your own success in some regard. And then it becomes a question of like, for someone like Malcolm Busey last year or Silas Fagnon, where it's like, are we then going to say they can, you know, quote unquote, never win a Heck Creighton, because we're going to say, well, look at the competition they're playing against, because that feels unfair. I can't wait for you, Tom, to relay to me what people have on this conversation, because yes, I am AWOL online and everything like that, because this conversation will go on, and I don't know if we'll ever come to a resolution about it, but Yeah,
and that's totally fair. Once again, just wanting to get your thoughts on it. And I guess kind of leading into the last thing you said, can you name the last time, the year, and if you know it, the player, the last time that a school from the AUS won the Heck Creighton?
Like maybe this goes to your point. My inclination would say we're thinking like 15 years ago when you had St. Mary's in the Vanier Cup. Is it the player? I wouldn't be able to recall who that might be, even though I kind of feel like maybe if I'm right on at least the team year, I might feel stupid when you say it, but that's where my mind goes. Cause to this whole conversation, if a team's making Vanier Cups, it's hard not to remove that bias from your head that makes you that player who's leading that squad, who's likely that MVP candidate, that much more spectacular. So no, I don't know, but I would say St. Mary's 07, I guess.
Well, technically you are correct, sir. You are correct. The only caveat in there, and some people might put their hand up, in 2013, Jordan Heather, quarterback for the Bishop Gators, did win the Heck Creighton.
Oh, but they were in the RSCQ.
Bishops did not join the AUS until 2016. So the last person to win it is also one of our trivia questions with Mad Jack at the very beginning, one Eric Glavik, who is also the only quarterback, the only player that has won the Heck Creighton on two different teams.
Well, golly, we got to get our folks out there. We got to get Mad Jack on this. We got to get, you know, all the football historians we have and dive into this, because this might feel like a conversation that is just, you know, I'm someone who studied philosophy in university. I'm used to talking about questions where it's like, there's really no answer to these things. But I think starting with that idea of like, there is such top talent in the league, across the league, irrespective of what we think of the specific conferences. I don't think anyone can look at what, you know, Silas has done at Santa Fe for the last 2-3 years and been like, well, it's an AUS thing. It's like, no, he is supremely talented. What Busey did last year is supreme talent. So I think it's it's that much more important. We're having these conversations to really hone down what it is to be a Heck Crichton, what that means. And it might be in the criteria, as I was saying, I don't have the wording in front of me right now, but I don't think this is just an exercise in futility. I think it's a great question you raise because of how much talent there is in the league. And man, it's going to be on full display on this weekend. So, shall we start diving into some of this content?
Let's do it, my man. Let's do it.
Well, I don't have really any rhyme or reason as far as which one we would start with first, but hey, as it's listed on the U Sports website in the national semifinals, I see the UTEC Bowl in front of me first. And as we mentioned, that's our Western Mustangs visiting the Montreal Carabin. Tom, in your time playing Montreal, it was never at their stadium, though, was it? The Sepsum Stadium, though, right?
That is correct. The only time I faced the Carabin was in the Vanier Cup at McGill Stadium.
Now, funny enough, I actually have gotten to play this team twice. One in Guelph for the Mitchell Bowl in 2015. I think it was the Mitchell. I always get it confused which one's which. But in the preseason of 2014, we went to Montreal, and we got to play them in a preseason game. And playing a game in Quebec to the point where we kind of started this whole conversation, it really is such a cool experience to get. And, obviously going back to your 2011 season, that was, and there's that TSN doc all about that, the greatest game ever played and all that stuff, where Laval called y'all out to come and play that game in the start. And I know Steph Potasek in that interview talked about how it kind of takes some of the, the classic, like, oh, they bleed like us, like they're human. Mm-hmm. Like we can, you go back into that with a little bit of calm to you and everything like that. That stadium in Montreal is so cool. And the way it's built, they have just the stands on the one side of it. I don't have a sense of what cardinal direction it would be on, but they have, assuming that it hasn't changed in the last, this is 9 years ago, I'm thinking about now. We're old men, Tom. But they have this overhang that, when we were there, especially at the time of the Legion of Boom Seattle Seahawks, the stadium in Seattle kept coming to mind as far as like a building that was specifically designed to amplify the noise being made in the stands. And of course, it gets loud. Those fans, as perhaps as well as anyone, travel, and especially when they're at home, you're right in their backyard. They will make noise and they will be out in full force. And obviously the Western Mustangs don't have many friends outside of the London region. Starting with this aspect of it, I mean, this is a team that, as we talked about breaking down the Yates Cup, that moxie they have being led by a third-year quarterback who in his first year was a Vanier Cup Offensive Player of the Year. How much does that factor in, given that, we talk about the big games and everything like that? Had it been Laurier in this game, that's a massive difference off the jump, I think, that we'd be talking about of Laurier going to visit Montreal than we are right now saying Western's going to Montreal. No?
Yeah, I think so. And I think it goes back to one of the things that we kind of talked about before, in that there's something to be said about playing in this game and having that experience. Having the experience of playing in Canada's biggest stage, suddenly, I don't ever want to say that you get used to the lights, but you're not as scared going into it because you know what to expect. That 2011 team, we were bright-eyed. We had no idea what was happening. We got out of the OUA and started leaving Hamilton, and we traveled out east to play against Acadia, and then we traveled all the way west to BC to play against Laval, and it was bright-eyed, and oh my God, there's so many people that are here, and there's interviews, and there's TV cameras, and oh my gosh. And then 2012, it's, we've been here before. We know what to expect. And that 2014 team, especially, the guys in my class, that was our third Vanier Cup. So we knew what to expect. We knew that the lights were going to be there. I think the shock came into play when we saw the hospitality that we saw in Montreal playing against Montreal. And that's a whole other story that I could get into. But there's something to be said about that. Now, suddenly, this is another football game for you. And yes, you don't recognize the names that are across from you anymore, but you know that they bleed like you do. They, you know that they're, you know, anywhere from 19 to 23 like you are. This is not some super team that's unbelievable, especially in our case with the Laval Rouge Or. They are another team. They are a damn good team, and there's a reason why you're playing them in either a national semi or in the National Cup, but they are just another team.
And to that point, too, you kind of alluded to it. This isn't the days of, like, no, those are, like, grown men with, like, children and a mortgage, I think was what you were leaning to. And now they've changed the rule of how many years after high school you can complete your university football playing. But here's what I want to throw to you first, because, I mean, it's obviously on the Montreal side of things, Jonathan Senecal, he's a Hec Crichton nominee out of the RSEQ in many ways. With how great this Western defense is, it seems like that's going to be one of the big questions. But frankly, I just, it goes back to the mid-2010s when we were playing Montreal twice, and I feel like that's really where they've built their identity and built this program to be able to compete and be able to, in many ways, take over the Quebec Conference from the Laval Rouge Or, is on the defensive front. And you have guys like Misen in the linebacking core, and then Fontenau on the defensive line, right in the middle with a Western team where, hey, I'm sorry to repeat some of the comments we were making going into the eights, whose running game has been obviously majorly compromised going into the playoffs, with obviously Keon breaking his ankle and Yazbek being out as well. We were proven wrong. Extremely so when they took out Laurier, and not just beating them, but running the ball effectively. Obviously, the Eric Anderson impact is huge being back, and I can't wait to see him in now out of conference games to really, like, prove that, like, hey, you know what, like, let's go, like, let's go, man. Come on, 61. But these guys are stout right at the middle. But Western has some of those all-stars on their O-line in the middle of their line as well. Is this going to be a similar situation? Like, if Western is victorious in this game, if they're going to that Vanier Cup in Kingston, which would, you know, they would be so excited about, especially after missing out on their home one last year. Are we going to be like, well, why did we even doubt that? Hey, Laurier had a stout defense as well. Great linebackers, great defensive line play. Western did what Western does. They ran the ball on them. Because I still have memories of that semifinal game against Laval last year where, I mean, Laval ran the ball on them, and they really slowed down Keon Edwards quite a bit as well. How much of a challenge do you see this interior defense, this sort of box defense in specific for Montreal, giving Western problems? Or do you think that it'll be, like I said, kind of like we talked about coming off the eights, Western will do all right?
Yeah, I really do think that Western is going to do all right. When you start looking at the quality of defensive linemen that are in the OUA currently, you look at the defensive line that they played at against Queens.
Yeah.
You know, you got Darian Newell, Van Wishart, Silas Hubert, you like all of these amazing players that are there. And then in the regular season, albeit, but the Windsor Lancers, Mufta Geli, Claudia Moussin, the unbelievable play that we saw there. And then you look at, you know, you got Luke Brubaker in the Laurier Golden Hawks, Chisholm and Senham. Like, there's so many phenomenal defensive linemen that are playing in the OUA right now that I think Western is very well capable to handle the Caravan as well going into this one here. And I think that while this Montreal defense really seems to be solid head to toe, now obviously I'm not following the RACQ nearly as much as I am following the OUA. I have seen a couple of their games, and there's not been one time when I'm looking at this Montreal defense and saying, oh, there's your weak spot, they can't do this, or they struggle with this, whatever. No, they're pretty solid. They're strong as hell. They rally to the football like freaking crazy, and they've got some ball hawks in the defensive secondary there. So I think that this Montreal defense is very good. But I think this is a good unit. I think this whole team is good. And I think that Western, and especially that offensive line, they've played against defensive linemen or even just the front seven, who I think are as good, maybe a step behind, because once again, for Montreal to shut out Laval like they did in the Dunsmore Cup, that's no mistake. That's unbelievable defensive play. But I think that this Western offensive line in particular is going to have their hands full, certainly, but I don't think they're going to be at a disadvantage by any means.
And you know what? Like, it'll be interesting to see. And I think the other point, when we think about this offense for the Western Mustangs going against Montreal, and maybe it's lazy to keep using the Laval game from last year as the comp, but obviously it's the most recent game we have to be able to think about it. And I think there are some sharp comparisons to make between, if we think about the defenses with Montreal and Laval from last year, and obviously a lot of the same faces for Western. Going into this year with Western, such a big talking point that we looked at was, you know, because late in that game with Laval, what was the big thing everyone was talking about? And I think you were the one really raising the alarm, is that Western didn't have a deep threat that didn't come off a play-action look. We said it all year long that Western was in many ways opening up their run game through their passing game, or just playing their offense through their passing game as an end in itself, not to set anything else up, right? You've seen the STM connection now for 3 years with Magne Jones, your boy Seth Robertson, Mohsen Jamal, you know, and just being these weapons for one Evan Hillock to be able to hit. How much of an impact do you see that making now in this game? And especially, we talked about the type of, like, you know, near psychotic competitor that Evan Hillock appears to present to be, where you know that he hasn't forgotten, and you brought this up, not just what happened, but what people were saying about what happened last year, now with him having another shot to make a Vanier Cup against an RCQ team.
Oh, absolutely. I think that the whole reason why Western's offense has had this shift where the pass is now starting to set up the run, and how they've been going into this year, is because of the loss that they had against Laval in the semifinals. I will be the first to say it here. If Western is playing how they are last year, like this year, and when I say that, I mean that they're focusing more on the pass than they are on the run, they beat Laval. And they go to the Vanier Cup and they win the Vanier. 100%. There's no doubt in my mind. I think that when Laval came in and said, hey, you know what? You didn't think that we can stop the run? Well, we can stop the run. And then you really put Western's, not even, I don't even want to say like weakness or whatever, but the playbook and how small it was in the pass game, and how few options that they had seemed to at least consistently rep Evan with in that time, they put that on display. Now you see 50-yard bombs out to Seth Robertson, Mohsen Jamal pretty much every game here. So they're focusing on that, and they're getting Evan in that kind of sense, and not even getting him prepared. They're just utilizing the fact that this is something that he can do, and he can do it pretty damn well. And I think now going into something like this and going into this Montreal game, having that focus here and allowing the fact that, hey, you know what? Evan Hillock's pretty damn good. Relying on him and getting the ball into their playmakers like Seth Robertson, Mohsen Jamal, and Savon Magny-Jones, especially when Keon Edwards and Keanu Yazbek are down. And once again, Ethan Dolby, Troy Thompson, they proved me wrong in the Yates Cup and they did their thing. But their star players, they are literal all-stars, are in the receiving core for this team here. And relying on Evan Hillock, their all-star quarterback, to get the ball out there is, I think, going to be the recipe for success for this Western Mustang team.
And it's worth noting, and I still have frostbite from the game. Like, it was dang cold and dang windy in that game. So if you were going to, once again, even if it's not to say that that's your weaker component, or a weak component of your team, if only by like comparison, because that run game was obviously you had Creighton nominee right in your backfield, right? That O-line last year, as we said, was phenomenal, with some of the guys like still having Philip Grahovic and having Zach Fry and Elliot Beamer on that O-line. Like, nothing against the guys they have now in the mix there. And obviously they still got our guy in Anderson, but that O-line was special. So if you were going to lean into stopping the run, you could be that much more assured, because you're saying, hey, your pass game isn't as refined and it's a dang wind tunnel here in London. flipping over to the other side of the ball with Montreal on offense and this Western team on defense. Here's the big thing that not being as into the RCQ scene as you or some of the other commentators out there, but as far as the big thing of like something's got to give, you have Jonathan Senecal, who I believe at least at the end of the regular season, I don't know if this included playoffs, those four interceptions on the year, something gaudy like that. And what have we been saying about Western all year long defensively? And you've been leading this parade as much as anyone. This defense turns people over. We've sung the praises of Jackson Finley. Richard Adu before at corner is an absolute monster. You know, Max Nixon, even in the linebacking core, is a great threat when he's dropping back to pick off a ball. Robert Pannerbaker, like, they have so many guys here that will make you pay for mistakes and that are so solid. And then obviously with guys like Riley McLeod and Lawrence Bowers-Kane and our guy Von Mueldorfer up front, causing problems as well to make quarterbacks uncomfortable, like we saw them do with Taylor Algrisma twice now. What gives in that matchup in terms of, is Montreal led by Senecal still going to play mistake-free, turnover-free football? Or can Western get them off, make them uncomfortable and do the things they've been doing all year long to start turning the ball over?
Well, something that actually legendary Western offense, legendary Western coach, excuse me, Greg Marshall said just the other day at the media day that they had for this bowl game on quarterback Jonathan Senecal. He's one of the best quarterbacks that I've ever seen in U Sports football, almost like a Trey Ford type of ability. Direct quote. And shout out to Persevere for sending that out to everybody. This kid is no joke. He is, I said it on the review pod, he was the offense against Laval. He is the guy for this team here. He is doing everything that he needs to in that sense, in terms of getting the ball downfield, running it with his legs, using his decision-making abilities. Like, this kid's the real deal. When you rely on a quarterback as much as that, you can see turnovers. We saw it even with Trey Ford. For as amazing as he was, there were times where he got into the turnover trouble because he had to elevate that Waterloo team as high as possible. And sometimes that means taking risks. And it's the same thing with this Montreal squad. Now, I think that this Montreal team is, as a whole, much better than the Waterloo teams, obviously. But to have that talent in Jonathan Senecal and to potentially be put in those kind of situations where I feel like I have to make a play here, suddenly you can get into those tricky situations or risky situations where that Western defensive secondary just thrives so much. Now, what I will say, and something that I think really got showcased last year, and once again, I know that we keep talking about last year, but it is worth talking about because this Western team is playing another team from the RSEQ. Last year, the Western, similar to this year, they really don't have a singular pass rush specialist on that Western defense. They've got guys who can get home, certainly, but there's not one guy like a Deontay Knight where you're like, holy crap, we need to make sure that we're watching out for this guy.
A Dylan Ainsworth.
Dylan Ainsworth. Oh my God, that guy. Yeah. But they don't have that one guy who is coming after the quarterback and even doing things like a Kaladia Moose and like a Tyson Hergott. They don't have somebody like that on this defense here. And in a case like Laval, where they have phenomenal offensive linemen year after year after year, and you see Arnold Desjardins, despite the wind tunnel like we were talking about, and he's sitting in the pocket. And he's literally sitting in the pocket looking down the field. That makes your defensive secondary's life a living hell to have to block or guard a receiver for 6-7 seconds. So if this Western team wants to see success, they've got to make sure that they can get home to this guy. But once again, like we've said, if he's got the ability to run and to extend plays with his legs, if you're not staying home, he's finding the crease and he's gone. So this is going to be a hell of a challenge for this Western team. Now, obviously, Coach Gleason, I believe it's Coach Gleason, was still around with that in that Trey Ford era and saw all the amazing ability that this kid had, and he was able to draft up a defense that go against him. So he should have some experience in that, but it's still going to be a hell of a game, a hell of a time for this Western defense trying to contain Mr. Senecal.
And as far as that comp, like, just so people are clear, like, Senecal is their running option too. Mm. Like, he is their leader, not only with his arm, but with his legs, and like doing so effectively. Like, that Trey Ford, like, I didn't hear that quote from Greg Marshall, and that's a beautiful thing to hear him say. And obviously, he's forgotten more about football than like the collective rest of, you know, us football pundits out there have ever learned. He's not going to just throw that around willy-nilly, unless it's a little like reverse psychology of trying to butter him up, like some kind of like Michael Jordan, Charles Barkley, like a la 93 NBA finals type action. It'll certainly be interesting to see, because then, as you said, with Gleason and this like institution of Western football on the defensive side, having played against Trey Ford, like, goes back to what we said in your question you raised about Heck Crichton's and everything like that. Look, Trey Ford never had a bad game, and it might be one of those things of you accept the fact he's gonna get his, but you make it such a heliocentric type of game that you say, hey, if he can single-handedly beat us, We will accept defeat. We will take that L, knowing that perhaps one of the greatest moments of football probably had to come to fruition. But if you let him, that kind of force multiplier effect to his other teammates and weapons, who I'm not as familiar with by any means, but no doubt they have them in droves, that's when it's really going to become a dangerous factor for them. Tom, what other angles do you have on this one? Because I'm not as familiar with this team going into this one.
So some of the things that I, you know, one thing I wanted to make sure we called out here as well. When you look at the passing game here, when you look at the receivers that are at the top of U Sports, you see in the top 10, 1, 2, 3 Western Mustangs in those receiving categories, purely for yards per game. You have that in touchdowns as well, but you can see the passing attack that's here with the Western Mustangs. To find a receiver from Montreal on that list, we have to go all the way down to number 22 on the list. And in that, you're passing, you know, you're seeing your Kevin Mitall, who's much higher, your Ben Harrington, Jackson Cooling, Gendron, Janusis. There's a lot of guys in between that who are great receivers, don't get me wrong, but you would assume that with a national team who's playing in a national semifinal with an unbelievable quarterback, that you would start to see that a little bit more. And even when we start to look at touchdowns, once again, Doso, receiver for them, is tied at 11 with touchdowns in a season at 4. Now, this is the regular season, don't get me wrong here, but I just thought it was something very interesting to kind of take a look at, that despite the fact of how good this quarterback is, it doesn't really have the receivers with the stats as well. Now, that tells me that this young man is not just picking one or two players, that he is really spreading the ball out across the entire team here, getting running backs involved, getting everybody involved here. But I don't know how potent this offense would be without Jonathan Senecal. Now, obviously, they are damn good, and they're where they are for a reason here, but I don't think it's any stretch to say that he is the reason why they are here in this place.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost funny then to think about, you know, once again, going back to like what makes true greatness, because then now that we've already invoked Trey Ford's name, you think about guys like Tyler Tarnowski and Gordon Lamb, and of course it's like, well, did he make them greater, or did they make him greater? And the truth of the matter is, they were just so great as a collective, and it's a team sport and everything like that, and you hit the nail on the head of, you know, clearly part of his talent involves not being able to hone in on one guy, which as far as a defensive game plan probably makes it that much more difficult, which almost, you know, so we could say like Trey Ford with a twist of Andreas Duick in the mix then as well, just as far as that ability to just get folks involved in the mix. Hey, no matter what angles you look at it, these are the two of the best we have duking it out. There's that extra je ne sais quoi. When it comes to these national semifinals, you know, this is going to be just an incredible view and experience. I don't know. So I don't know if I, like, here's the thing, Tom, like, I don't know if I'm qualified enough to truly pick a winner in this matchup. And frankly, I feel like after having picked against Western twice in those Laurier games, I feel like the Londoners out there wouldn't want me picking Western right now. But you know what? For what it's worth, I don't believe in the sports gods. So hey, I want to see Western playing in a Vanier Cup in Kingston. So I'm at least trying to manifest that into existence. And Mr. OUA, let's see the Western Mustangs advance to one round. So I'll pick Western in this one, if only for the reasons. I mean, I think, you know, we talked through a few reasons, and there are plenty more why they are certainly, I mean, the best team in the country. Like, let's not forget that. But they were the best team in the country last year when they played Aval. Any other angles you have on this, or where are you going on the pick?
Well, you know, if nothing else, to really drive my point home about how important this young man is to this Montreal offense, to find the top rusher for this team, also Jonathan Senecal, with just under 400 yards rushing on the season.
Ooh.
And once again, this is in the regular season, certainly, but he is their top rusher. He is their top passer. He is this offense. He is yards. He is touchdowns. He is everything for this team here.
Just under 400, you said?
394 yards.
Is that like high teens? Is he in the 20s? Where is that? I feel like that's...
He is number 28.
28? I mean, fair enough. He's a quarterback. But yeah, that's just... I'm so excited. I'm so excited. I don't want to be sitting here being like, oh, what are we talking about? Like, but because that, like, it's like, no, he, you know, he'll show us. And also, once again, that defense gives up like 10 points a game. So it's like not as if that it's all about him, even though it is very much, as you said, all about him on the offensive side of the standpoint, offensive standpoint of the ball. Let's slide over to the Mitchell, of course, to do so. We're heading out west where the Santa Fex. Oh,
hang on now. I still need to make my pick here.
Tom Sterling. I'm so sorry. My apologies. Floor is yours.
It's all good, my friend. It's all good. I've been looking forward to this one and kind of dealing things out. So I will make this quick. But when you take a look at both of these squads here and you take a look at the route that they got to here, you think the Western Mustangs, if nothing else, doubted and us showing that doubted to get to where they are here, proving people wrong, doing the things the Western way, making people play their game all year long, and understanding that their game can change from the unbelievable running attack that we saw from Keon Edwards last year to the passing attack that is one of, if not the best in the country here. To go along with a defense that takes away the ball through the air better than any other team playing in U Sports right now, having a kid like Jonathan Senecal is going to give them fits. They are going to do some really great things here. And with a defense that, like you said, is only giving up 10 points a game, this is going to be a struggle for the Western Mustangs here, certainly. I wouldn't be surprised if in that first half, some things aren't going their way. Maybe they get a classic Brian Garrity field goal, because that dude is just automatic from wherever he is. But I think the thing that takes them over the top is, once again, what we've talked about before, in that halftime adjustment. I think they go out there, they punch Montreal in the mouth, they get punched themselves, they say, oh wow, this team is really good, they deserve to be here, make their adjustments, own the third quarter, own the fourth quarter. The Western Mustangs are going to the Vanier Cup this year.
We're looking at this one with purple tinted glasses. My apologies once again, Tom Sterling. Let's head out west for the Mitchell Bowl. I'm hesitant to just raise a question just in general, just about the nature of this cross country game. I don't know what the clicks are of how far exactly SaintFX is traveling. I mean, you and me almost like had an aneurysm just trying to figure out what the drive from Windsor, Ontario to Ottawa is. I don't want to have to figure out, though. I can tell you're probably doing a little Googling right there. Because I think ultimately we need to save this conversation for another point. There is something perhaps interesting that could happen or that's been spoken about as far as how to make these matchups more fair. Tom, what's the travel we're looking at here?
5,816 kilometers, or if you're feeling up to it, a 56-hour drive.
When we make our first million here at the 55, we'll take that drive. We'll go stop at every campus. We'll save that conversation for another day. It's conversations that have been having been had for years just regarding how to best sort of structure football across one of the biggest countries on earth. But nonetheless, we have the SaintFX X-Men taking on the UBC Thunderbirds. As we said, it's going to be out in BC. Tom, I want to start this one off for you. And, you know, obviously without an OUA team in this one, I'm very much out of my comfort zone. but I at least thought it'd be interesting to set you up from the standpoint of how much like you talked about, we saw Montreal and Western get there. And with this one, thinking about UBC in almost as dramatic a fashion, any game could end, winning that Hardy Cup. And then as far as the Loney Bowl, you know, you see Bishop's putting up some points in that fourth quarter and a team that was competitive with SaintFX in the regular season, no doubt. But it feels like both these teams are kind of coming in with two much different games to it from what you know about these clubs. And at the same time, I mean, like, that's kind of, I guess, sounds like I'm saying, is SaintFX going to be in a bit of a cruise control? But we know who's at the quarterback, who's at the helm for them at quarterback. And I'm not one to start doubting the greatness of Silas Fagnon. But nonetheless, thinking about that perspective of UBC with that incredible ending to their game against Alberta, and then SaintFX, a slightly more controlled victory for them. Where do you see that playing a role in this?
Well, I think it's interesting to note the fact that obviously this UBC team has had a ton of resiliency and playing against some of the best opponents that they're going to see in the Manitoba Bisons and then in the Alberta Golden Bears here. And they've had to overcome adversity in both of these games. The offense struggling to come alive, but then really coming alive against Manitoba and shutting down a very good offense in Tichinski and a decent defense as well. And then obviously having to come back down at one point by 13 points to roar back and to win the Hardy Cup by a 1 point and in very dramatic fashion. So they have confidence in them. They know that they can come back. They know that they're never out of a game here, certainly. SaintFX, not a much easier time, but not as dramatic, certainly, as what UBC has had to deal with in the playoffs. Remember, this team went to triple overtime against the Bishop Gators in the regular season here, so they know that they can do this. When they played in the semifinals, their offense struggled and then suddenly came alive against the St. Mary's Huskies after being a little bit overwhelmed, came alive and stayed alive throughout the entire game here. Just to give you something of a breakdown in terms of how dominant this SaintFX team is, in the 2023 regular season, they led the conference in scoring, points per game, yards per game, passing yards, passing touchdowns, rushing touchdowns, field goals, sacks, and points per game against at just 12 and a half here. They had 11 players on the all-star list this past year. this is a team that is the best of the best in the AUS. And I think in the 14 years, 15 years, whatever the math works out to be, since they the St. Mary's Huskies made it to the Vanier Cup back in 2007, I think this team is the most well-prepared to break that streak and to potentially get into the Vanier Cup. Now, they've got a hell of a matchup against UBC here, and I'm not making my picks just yet. But this is a team that from top to bottom is playing some of its best football. And I think with having been in this national semifinal game for a couple of years now, this is a team that's really going to be poised and ready to go here. Even this coaching staff here, in the last 10 years, the winner of the AUS, the Lonely Bowl, six of those times has been St. FX. They know how to get here. They know to get into this national semi how important it is. And they gave Saskatchewan a hell of a game last year, coming down to the fourth quarter, as I emphatically talked about last year as well. So I really do think that this St. FX team is legit. I think they're going to give UBC a hell of a game.
You know, there was a point early in the OUA season where we were just talking about some of the coaches that like are donning the sidelines of these games that just like make the, you know, obviously make the games that much more special. And you've made the point so effectively of just how important coaching is, and it's you know, at all levels of the game and in all components of it. And we could have just as easily talked about this in the UTEC Bowl matchup, but I mean, you mentioned the coaching with St. FX and with UBC. I mean, just the notion of Coach Waterman, Coach Nil, patrolling the sideline for these two teams. I mean, it's such a beautiful thing. And just the idea that this St. FX team is well prepared and that they will be ready to take on the best that the Can West has to offer. And you mentioned that Saskatchewan game, and it was such a great moment earlier this year when, well, not so much long ago, not too long ago, when you mentioned, of course, that Mason Nias, the quarterback from Saskatchewan, is now working with Rooker out in UBC. And just you almost wonder, like, my goodness, as much as, you know, as incredible as it was a task for, you know, Busey and Fagnon and the stellar players on that defense to put up the fight they did in Antigonish last year against Saskatchewan, the fact that they're taking on not only obviously Rooker and the rest of the UBC Thunderbirds, but with the sort of knowledge, the intimate knowledge that Nias has, having played them last year, it's certainly worth considering as this game goes on. Just as far as, you know, we talk about that aspect of teams that don't necessarily play each other that often, having that proverbial ace in the hole of a guy who's like, no, I game planned for these guys last year, and I was on that field in their house, I'm a little familiar with it, is a very fascinating component to think about in this game.
I love that you brought that up because, yeah, absolutely. Talk about somebody who's seen this team and seen this defense and knows that Silas is the real deal and he's able to make some plays here. So I think that's definitely going to give these UBC Thunderbirds a leg up in this one here. But you talk about the legendary coaches here. And I'd be remiss if I didn't use that opportunity as a beautiful segue into talking about one Blake Nil, the head man for the UBC Thunderbirds. This man is a legend in and of himself. The last time that we were really talking about the AUS and the dominance that they had there was due to Blake Nil being out at St. Mary's for that time. Now, his head coaching time came to an end in 2005, but the last time that St. Mary's got to the Vanier Cup was 07, which were 100% still the players that he had recruited there. Not taking anything away from the coach at the time there for St. Mary's, but you get where I'm coming from here. He had such a positive impact on the East when he was out there. He won two Vanier Cups in 2001 and 2002. He then went to the Calgary Dinos and brought them the three Vanier Cups, obviously losing those. And in his first year as head man at UBC, brought the Thunderbirds to a Vanier Cup in 2015. This man knows football. He's been around the game for a number of years, and he is a hell of a coach in doing the things that he can do here. On the other side of things, it is important to note, Gary Waterman, the head coach for the St. FX X-Men, has won the Coach of the Year in the AUS six times tying the record with one Jeff Cummings, who is still currently the head coach for Acadia and has been there for a number of years. This man has really brought a winning culture to St. FX, and he's been recognized for it. He's won the Coach of the Year in 2015, 2016, 2018, 2021, 2022, and now 2023. He's on a three-year streak of winning Coach of the Year. So these guys know football. They know what they're doing with their squads here, and it is going to definitely come down to who has the better game plan going into this. If you're a hell of a coach and you understand who's on the other sideline here, and you're understanding not only do you have Blake Nell, but you've got Mason Nias to go up against as well, do you change up what you've been doing all year to try to bring something different? Remember, I think I said this maybe even last year, but just to remind all of our viewers here, I don't know if it's a U Sports rule. I'm sure that it probably is. But when you play against an outer conference team, you get three games. That's it. So in this game, each team will have the conference championship, the playoff game, and then maybe the last regular season game or the semifinal or the quarterfinal, whatever the case may be. But you get three games. So if you did anything goofy in the beginning of the regular season here that you haven't shown since, now is the time to bring that out and to say, nobody has game film on this. So we've got a whole bunch in our back pocket here that we could potentially utilize. And certainly with both of these teams having played against their own conference opponents multiple times in a season, you know that they're not bringing out the entire deck in terms of their options that they have in the first game. They're saving some, or they're utilizing some other things, or understanding their team. Because like we said, when St. FX beat Bishops to win the Loney Bowl, that was the third time that they had played. So it's, you're not doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a similar result here. And understanding that the last time before the Loney Bowl, St. FX played against Bishops and went to triple overtime. So obviously Bishops knew what their game plan was at the time. They counteracted. So you have to get better and better in that regard. If you've got something in your back pocket that you can potentially go out here with, that's really where a lot of the recipe for success comes, especially when you're a team like the AUS, where you may not have some of the best players, or maybe you don't have the, I don't know, whatever it is. I don't want to make excuses for them because they earned their right to get into the national semis here. But like even last year, their ace in the hole, their surprise, was the nation's leading running back in Malcolm Busey took a backseat to Silas. And he came out onto the scene and we were, oh my gosh, they've got a quarterback back there. So I'm very interested to see how St. FX attacks this. Once again, that is a hell of a plane ride going from Eastern Canada to Western Canada to play in Vancouver here. So I'm sure they're going to be a bit jet lagged. Hopefully they can get there a few days early and get acclimatized to it. But you have to have something in your back pocket here, just in case. If you're getting down to the wire here, you need a spark in your team. That's something that can really come into play in these national semis.
And you wonder if you're UBC, and I don't know if there's any update that's been made public about Malcolm Busey's status after missing the Loney Bowl. Mm-hmm. But then if you're UBC, you already have such a task to game plan for as far as what St. FX brings offensively. Just thinking about Silas, are you assuming that Malcolm's in? Are you assuming he's out? Maybe the game plan stays the same. And how does that affect it? I love that point you brought up of just these teams, because of the smaller conferences they play in, having to, by necessity, game plan without always playing all your cards at once. On the other hand, you got a guy in Isaiah Knight for UBC who obviously had a really nice season as well. He could turn into a really interesting running affair, not to be outshined by, obviously, as we talked about, with the quarterback play. But it's, you know, thinking about the Busey factor in this. I mean, I guess I'll leave it at that. Like, do you know, like, has anyone been talking about if there's any update as to whether we're going to see the reigning AUS MVP?
As of right now, no, there's no update in terms of where Malcolm Busey's health. I don't believe that he was out in the last game. I didn't see him at least for myself. But I think that if there's ever going to be a time where you try to push through an injury and you try to play a national semifinal, is a hell of a time to do it, especially when you haven't been represented on the national stage, your conference, since 2007 here. So I don't know any insiders here. I think that regardless, even if Malcolm Busey is in, I think your defensive game plan for the run game stays the same. You try to limit it, obviously, as best you can. But I really think that UBC is walking into this saying, Silas is the guy we need to look out for. We need to make sure that we've got him and Ben Harrington, one of his favorite receivers, locked up.
Last thing I'll just mention, and maybe this kind of lends itself into the picks, and I mean, if I didn't feel like I was really qualified to truly pick between Montreal and Western as of not having much of an insight on Montreal, I certainly am not one to really have a pick on this, but we'll at least do it so people can make fun of me when I make the wrong decision. The state of AUS football being what it's been for the last decade and a half, let's say, UBC being a program that has been, you know, catapulted into such incredible status, as you highlighted with Blake Nill, for about the past 10 years now, I suppose it's been. Saying, and then going back to that question of how do we compare these teams at a conference, between conferences, when you have St. FX going undefeated in their season, getting ranked nationally fourth, with UBC then sitting in eighth. I guess just generally, when you think about these two teams as far as who they've had to play, the adversity they've had to overcome, because as you highlighted, this is maybe one of the best AUS teams that there's been in quite a while. And yet, much like we've said with Western this year, they still have those moments of adversity, which maybe makes you believe in them that much more, highlighting that Bishop's game in specific. And of course, UBC in that, I was about to say Loney Bowl, not Hardy Cup, with that game against Alberta. Maybe it's not as much a question, but it's just a continually fascinating thing that I don't even know if the results of these games resolve when we think about which of these conferences are stronger than the other. Because, as we said, you know, just it's football, yeah, it sometimes is as simple as looking at the quarterbacks, and we look at these quarterbacks in all four of these teams. They're all phenomenal. They're all so good. And so when it comes down to this, it really does feel like this isn't a question of like it's an AUS team against anyone else. You pick the anyone else. But maybe that is where we're going still. Tom, I don't know. Any last thoughts that you have on this one?
I think one of the other things to really kind of take into consideration here, when you're taking a look at this UBC squad and you see all of the amazing players that they have, you see a Garrett Rooker, you see an Isaiah Knight, these guys who have played against stout teams in the Can West, is there an aspect of, hey, we got the easy ticket, we're playing against the AUS, we're going into the Vanier Cup? Is there an aspect of that? Now, I don't think that Blake Nill is going to allow for something like that because, like we said, he came from the AUS. He knows the teams and how they could be out there. But when you have something like that, that's a, you know what? They haven't been here since 2007. There's been a few games where they really, the AUS has been blown out. Maybe there's a little bit of a, you know, I think we can do this. We're packing our bags. We're getting our toothbrushes ready. We're going to go to Kingston. If you start overlooking this team, that's really where this can kind of bite you in the ass here. You know, I really think that there's a lot of factors that come into play here. And I would say that even the idea of a bias is something that UBC is going to have to make sure that they are not falling into, just as the fact that outside of the game, St. FX is going to have to deal with that long flight, because anybody who's been on a long flight like that, who played in a game, knows that's not just something that you just say, oh, whatever, and you just go from there. That takes an effect on you. The travel does take an effect on you. You're not practicing in your facility anymore. You don't have your routines. You're coming from a hotel. You know, you're out of your rhythm there, as you are in any away game. So something to be thinking about at the very least. When we're looking at both of these squads here and you see the production that these teams have, My heart says I want St. FX, but my head says UBC comes away with this one. I think that Garrett Rooker and Isaiah Knight and the offensive firepower that they have there just overwhelms St. FX. And I think that Silas does some great things once again. And I think this game is actually close. And if anything, hopefully adding to a little bit more of the legitimacy of the AUS. But I think UBC at home with Blake Neal and Mason Nias take this one and they make it to the Vanier Cup.
With Blake Neal and Mason Nias, what a duo that is in terms of Canadian lore. It just, hey, you know what? It's the travel piece of it, the Malcolm Busey piece of it. Whether it's bias or not, the conference comparison piece of it, it's hard not to go with the home team in this one with UBC and with what it seems like Rooker's been doing all year long against competition that does seem like it might be a little bit better. But that's why there's certainly a conversation coming down the pike between you and I and maybe some other special guests about perhaps some revigorating that could occur within U Sports. But we'll save that for another day. Tom, oh my goodness. You know, a year ago, I can still hear, you know, our friend Nate Hobbs barking, cheering for his Saskatchewan Huskies, talking about Mason Nias. What a glorious weekend of football that was, seeing Western get knocked off against Laval with a trip to a home Vanier there, seeing, as you said already, Silas put up the fight of all fights against Nate Hobbs's Huskies in Antigonish to set up what ended up being an incredible Vanier. I imagine you, much like myself, expect nothing less from this weekend we have coming up. Parting words, Tom, for everyone listening as we go into the UTEC and Mitchell Bulls this Saturday.
This is the time here where our game gets put on the national stage and hopefully actually has some decent TV coverage so that more and more people can start checking things out and seeing where U Sports kind of comes into play here. I think that both of these games are going to end up being classics here. I really think that the St. FX team is going to come to play and give UBC all that they can handle. And any time the OUA plays against the RSEQ, that is must-watch television here. I cannot wait for two games that are going to be outstanding, and we get to find out who is going to play in the Vanier Cup.
I had to just try and Google to see if, assuming that our picks come to fruition and it's a Vanier Cup between Western and UBC, and perhaps this would have been better to save in the event that it comes true, but I'm just curious, Tom, do you think you can recall a time where these teams have played?
Western and UBC?
Yeah.
Oof, the last time that I think they played, I'm going to say, I know for sure it was 1987.
You're such a beauty. 1982, the 18th Vanier Cup at Varsity Stadium in Toronto, the UBC Thunderbirds winning their first ever championship by defeating Western 39-14. Maybe we just put the curse on both those clubs. Maybe I put the curse on Western by picking them after I'm sure all those Western faithful cursed out at the heavens at me for, well, if you're Dakota Vine, my betrayal of my alma mater, Western Mustangs now. Whatever side you're taking in these games, I hope you're having a fantastic Saturday consuming these games. And as always, thank you so much for consuming our content, however it is you are doing so. Tom, I can't wait to be messaging with you all Saturday long about these games. Can't wait to be talking to you about them likely later on the weekend. And you can hear us then at the 55.